there's a shared experience. With that shared experience of it, it helps me see the parts of me that I didn't dare to see before. And hearing another woman's experience allows me to recognize that I also feel that way. It's helped me realize things that I didn't realize about myself or didn't want to accept in myself.
We're talking about women's groups and men's groups and if we still need them on this edition of The Gender Knot, the podcast where we untangle the new masculinity and femininity. I'm your host, my name is Nastran Tavakoli-Farr, but call me Naz, and we're trying to figure out gender roles for the modern era. This week, we're going to ask if we still need men's groups and women's groups. We talked to two coaches to get their take.
I think as a society, we haven't really had enough training or understanding of how to really handle emotion with care and with the degree of consciousness that we've already put so much effort in understanding about external measurable things.
For me, if having a men's only space allows people to open up and really explore some of their beliefs and misunderstandings which aren't true, and that allows them to have a better life, then that's why I do it.
And a guy who started a men's group while at university.
I wasn't having many honest, open, vulnerable conversations.
And we go back to one of our previous guests who slagged off men's groups on this very show, but is now a huge fan.
I had a hard time imagining what a men's group would actually be like.
Do we still need men's groups and women's groups? It may sound like a weird question to ask in this day and age. Why should we be segregating ourselves due to gender? Isn't that why a lot of injustice has happened in the first place? The many centuries of men and women living separate lives and not having an understanding of each other's experiences and treating each other like, well, the other. I mean, think about the old boys' networks where high-powered men just mingle with each other and keep women out of the top positions. And not just women, but men who aren't of the elite as well. You know, those circles of wealth and privilege and power and shutting everyone else out based on birth. And isn't it a bit outdated to suggest that in some ways we might not be entirely comfortable around each other? And anyway, who says gender is so binary? What about all these theories about gender being on a spectrum? And doesn't the concept of just separating men and women play into assumed dynamics and undercurrents that we're trying to get past? Okay, for this episode, I'm going to treat things like a binary and discuss from there. And I'll tell you why. Men's groups and women's groups seem to be becoming a thing. I'm seeing more men around me joining groups where they get together with other men once a week and work through their problems. And I'm also seeing more women actively looking to join groups made up only of women, saying that they feel more comfortable or that they need that sort of a space. And these are women like me, women who have always cringed at being girly and grew up priding themselves on being able to hang with the boys. The more boisterous and feisty, the better. And I've been doing it too. I've been scanning message boards and asking women I know about whether there are any women's groups they're in and that they recommend. Basically, why is this suddenly a thing? This gender segregation is something I've had quite a bit of experience with up close. I'm Iranian, and a lot of Middle Eastern societies are pretty segregated when it comes to gender. And they largely remain this way, more so than the West. And then add the fact that I spent my teenage years at an all-girls school. Even though I jokingly go on about how I found girls' school culture annoying, I sort of also appreciated it in a sense, and do so even more now. First, I want to talk to another woman who, like me, has usually shunned the notion of gathering in a single-sex group, but has recently found them to be really valuable. You may recall Michelle Lim from the episode on men and feminism. She's a relationships coach, and we caught up one afternoon to try and uncover why she's suddenly a fan of women's groups.
Do you feel like you have a need for a women's only group?
Previously, I probably wouldn't, and maybe in a professional setting, I also wouldn't. Whenever, even at work, when there's girls' night, I'm quite resistant. I mean, actually last year at our company gathering, there was, I think, a women's breaking the glass ceiling workshop. And I remember I popped in for a little bit and I left.
Why?
A lot of it was really similar to the lean in topic of women taking responsibility. And the conversation was around, okay, we can't just sit around and wait for the system to change. There are things that we personally need to take responsibility for and fight for. And we as a community of women also need to look out for each other rather than competing with each other so that we can collectively raise each other up. Maybe personally, I felt like, okay, I've heard that many times and I'm already doing it. I didn't feel like I could add to the conversation, or I didn't feel like I could have gotten more out of the conversation. So this is the thing. Oftentimes, these women's only discussion happens mostly with women when we may need to, quote unquote, work across the aisle and reach out to men. And often, I think maybe at that workshop, there was maybe only one or two, if even, any men present on the exec team. On the one hand, I could imagine, like, why would they? Of course, they wouldn't be interested in this topic. And if we had invited them, yeah, it feels like it's begging for their attention.
In a way, though, these are the conversations that the male leadership need to hear, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's all good and well for us to talk amongst ourselves as women about the problems we're facing, but that kind of puts the onus purely on us, which is a problem.
Yeah.
Then I guess then the question is, though, would a lot of women even feel comfortable raising these topics in a mixed group?
Yeah. And so, but what I have found myself talking to women's only groups about has been maybe more personal issues that's outside of work. Now that I bring this up, at my house, they even organized girls' night. And I remember both times I only ducked in for the first half and I left. I live with about 14 people of mixed gender, half male, half female. And then one day we have a girls' night, and or we've had it twice now. And this is usually how it plays out. The the sequence of the night, would, and this last one is actually, it's so funny. You can see pictures of it, and it could be so stereotypical. Yeah, we had decorations that were pink with spiralized ribbon and confetti on the table. And one of the girls wanted to do this like pink cotton candy based cocktail. And so things were sweet and pink, and we started the night with gathering to, you know, curl our hair, doll ourselves up, and paint our nails, and then we had sushi, and then we drank the cocktails, and then we were going out. So when I first heard that, I was just saying, I don't really want to participate in this. This is just too much estrogen for me. I found us talking about boys and relationships, and it kind of made me cringe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was like, why are we talking about something more substantive, of more depth? And I guess I could have brought that in too.
It's a bit cliche, isn't it? Girls get together, drink cocktails, and talk about guys.
Yeah. That would be a typical spread on the cover of Elle or Cosmopolitan.
It's patronizing, no? Like, I don't know.
I don't know. I'm describing this as a fact.
Okay.
And
I'm really offended.
That's interesting. You and I have a value judgment on that.
Mm-hmm.
As if that's somehow doesn't make us as credible or serious, or those types of environment has to be superficial. And that superficial is bad.
Yeah, what this makes me think of is something I guess I've struggled with for a long time, is that maybe the male space gets to determine what is quote-unquote serious or heavy or has depth. You know, I've just sat here laughing and cringing about talking about relationships, but that is such an important part of life.
Yeah.
Maybe because, okay, I see this a lot as a journalist, right? And it's like being a serious journalist means talking about policy and diplomacy and politics and all this stuff.
Yeah.
I remember once I was at journalism school and there was a conversation and someone said something disparaging about Oprah. All she does is talk to mothers about how to feed their kids and stuff. And that really pissed me off because I was like, what is more important for the country, or like for society? A bunch of boring guys in DC talking about policy and stuff, and like diplomacy, and like, you know, which leader said what to who at what summit, or Oprah talking to like mothers about how to feed your kids. And I'm like, even if we want to talk about the economy, what is more important for the economy? Having like kids who have been like fed well and are healthy and stuff?
Yeah.
Or like, you know, a bunch of dudes talking about some diplomatic scandal.
Yeah.
And that kind of annoyed me, because it is this sort of thing of like, oh, those are the women talking about unimportant things.
Sure.
whereas we're talking about something quote unquote important. And it's like, A, who determines it's important?
Yeah.
And B, it's actually not important. You're completely, you think just because it's sort of cerebral and thinky.
And action oriented.
Exactly.
And frames and, because what's coming up for me is, in a lot of our conversations, public conversations, and even what we value as a society, a lot of it is, you can say what's on the outside, what can be done, what can be structured, whether it's on a personal level of what you show people, or even on a country level of policies and how we do things, how we take action, and more objective things that you can see. Our society doesn't really have a vocabulary around talking about the interior and talking about the intangible, things that you can't really see but are very important part of people's lives. You know, your example of Oprah talking about relationships, and even girls' topic talking about relationships, and even around parenting, and a lot of these more, in a way, like soft, and you can also call it like humanistic topics, we don't give as much emphasis, and there aren't too many spaces where you're talking about them. And even when we're talking about them, it's deemed as softer values, as if
it's not as important.
Yeah.
But that's interesting because, okay, as someone who grew up being very clever, and that was a big part of my identity growing up, like, you know, Nastran, she's a very clever little girl. Mm-hmm. And the past few years, I've been trying to get better with my emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Dealing with the emotional realm is so much harder than dealing with the cerebral realm. And that is maybe why the example I gave about, like, you know, dudes in DC talking about policy being more important. The reason why I got so angry is partly because I know myself that talking about something cerebral, it's not necessarily that hard. Dealing with people, relationships, not just romantic, but, you know, dealing with a friend, dealing with a colleague, like, you know, that is all about uncertainty. It's all about being vulnerable. It's all about having confidence. And it's about the self. It's about going places which are uncomfortable to go to.
Mm-hmm.
And that is actually hard work.
It's really, really hard.
And that is often the realm that women deal with. And it's dismissed. And even I dismissed it earlier when I cringed at you talking about the women getting together.
I did too.
I don't want to sound accusatory towards men, but I wonder if it's like a sort of, they are better at dealing with the cerebral world because there has been such an expectation in a lot of societies that men should suppress feelings.
Mm.
So then they get to determine, this is what's important. Because it's kind of like, this is what I can handle. Maybe that's really harsh, but sometimes I wonder if, and I know that's a bit of an attack on men, but I wonder if it's a case of you folks struggle with the emotional, so you're going to determine that that's less serious and less important.
That I'm not sure if they are determining that. And I would say not all women are great at talking about emotions either.
No.
Even when we're talking about relationships, I often find people are blaming each other. I mean, there's a lot of victimization that happens amongst women friends who are talking about relationships. A lot of, like, I can't believe he did this. I can't believe he did this to me.
Right.
And that's not a healthy way of talking about relationships either. So about the difficulty in talking about emotions, I think as a society, we haven't really had enough training or understanding of how to really handle emotion with care and with the degree of consciousness that we've already put so much effort in understanding about external measurable things.
So you and I have been doing a lot of inner work the past few years.
Yeah.
So I've been seeing an analyst, and that is by far so much harder than any of the sort of fancy schools I went to and all the sort of very thinky, fancy, hard things I did that garner me a lot of respect.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So I often think about that. Like, by far the hardest thing I did was delve into my inner life. So much harder than studying economics or, like, I don't know.
And for me, one of the most valuable things about the inner life is in identifying the unknown unknowns, things that you don't know about yourself. Now I'm actually looping back to the female only and men only. So one is, it's difficult to talk about these topics. And so usually in order to delve into these topics and explore the interior and explore the self, which requires a lot of vulnerability, it requires a safe space.
Dangerous word.
That's true, yes, exactly.
Safe spaces.
Mm-hmm. Or an environment that is safe, where we do feel comfortable letting down our guard, not looking stupid. And maybe it's also simpler to not have to add that extra dynamic. And these are maybe really subtle, whether it's power dynamic when you have male and female in the room, or sexual dynamic that may come up. And granted, I mean, in women's only group, you may have sexual dynamic there too. And maybe it's simpler, it's safer, it's cleaner. And there's another layer of there's a shared experience. With that shared experience of it, it helps me see the parts of me that I didn't dare to see before. And hearing another woman's experience allows me to recognize that I also feel that way. It's helped me realize things that I didn't realize about myself or didn't want to accept in myself.
So you are seeing the value of a women's only group.
Yeah. And so what you were talking about previously, it just made me realize that's the reason why people have women's only or women's only group or men's only group and why they can be valuable. And maybe my resistance to that beforehand was more of maybe even if we are segregating ourselves in women's only, is that really the way to quote unquote solve the problem? And if men are going off and having their own groups, are they not perpetuating the existing power structures?
But when you say that you're seeing the value of a women's only group,
yeah.
Is that to discuss any topic or topics that are quote unquote more female or related to the female experience?
Yeah, for me, what's been valuable have been using those to talk about the female experience and understanding myself as a female being. Yeah, allow myself to explore the more feminine side.
Okay, straight up, I need to make a bit of a correction about slagging off diplomatic reporters out in Washington and going on a bit of a rant about journalists who delve into policy issues. Basically, put it this way, I used to work in global news and I went to universities where everyone goes off and works for big international organizations, so part of me always pokes fun at places like Brussels and DC and Geneva and The Hague, and you get my drift. I think being a reporter who talks about diplomatic tensions between world powers and the latest changes in interest rates is really important. I'm not dismissing any of that. My point with my rant was that those simply aren't the only things that are important. Talking about family dynamics, the health of children, our well-being, how we exist and how we experience the world, these things are also important. Michelle always says this fantastic line, "It's not an either or, it's a both and." And there's room for the cerebral and the action orientated, as well as room for the inner life. Also, I'm slightly covering myself so that all the people I know who work in Brussels and Geneva, etc., aren't going to suddenly start talking to me after this. Anyway, back to men's groups and women's groups. It's interesting how Michelle untangled her interest in women's groups. When I was a teenager at this all-girls school, I really didn't like it. But then, I didn't really like most things back then. That sounds a bit bleak, but it is what it is. I recall hating that whole culture of girls talking about what was going on in their lives. Things they'd done, people they'd hung out with, social gatherings they're about to go to. I mean, I was very withdrawn and one of those really smart girls who ends up being really cerebral to somehow prove that they were better than the others. We were the serious ones. We talked about serious things and ideas and not experiences and stuff. I remember going to university and suddenly really falling in with men and indulging that super cerebral part of me, a way to avoid the inner life, I guess. It's weird looking back now because that didn't make me happy either. It was just easier to hang with guys. You could talk about things. I don't know, records you liked and concepts and theories and the news. You know, those really cerebral but totally safe topics of conversation. By the way, I'm not saying that all guys are into this sort of thing, but rather that's the circle I hung in. But, you know, there was also an element of these sorts of men taking up a lot of space, and that felt really suffocating. Their voices were so loud and they were so forceful. Everything was a big discussion. They were constantly having to explain things, not necessarily to me, but to each other, to prove themselves or something. I recently had an experience like that again in a professional context, and I felt like I wanted a safe haven of women who understood my daily struggles and the nuances of how I need to operate in the professional world given my gender, and that I can't always go in and be super demanding and get what I want, that I need to be more delicate with how I navigate things. I'm not saying that these men that I recently dealt with had bad intentions, but they just didn't get it. And maybe it's unfair of me to expect that they should get it, because why would they get it if they haven't lived it? But I suddenly really appreciated having spent those fragile teenage years at a girls' school. The way intelligent and opinionated men take up space feels so palpable sometimes. And I say that as an intelligent and opinionated woman who speaks up and says my piece. Whereas I recall girls' school atmosphere having far less of that. There was space for me, as a curious and smart girl, to express myself and to be heard. I'd always dismissed all female spaces, but then a decade of work in the real world happened, and relationships happened, and most importantly, a lot of therapy and self-improvement and finding my soul and spirit happened. In realizing that there are things in the world that I do experience differently because I'm a woman. All the things I dismissed years before about women being discriminated against, about women having to bear the emotional burden that others can't, and about women having to walk the fine line of proving that they're capable, but not too capable, lest that be deemed too threatening. All these things actually happened to me firsthand. They were no longer theories that a bunch of women complained about. And also, good things happened as well. The joys of being able to share and connect with others. Noticing how a lot of women have a relentless drive and spirit to always build and heal and mend and keep moving forward because they sort of have to. I came to realize that being a woman did mean experiencing the world in a different way to my male counterparts. And suddenly, wanting to be in a women's group made sense to me. Now, I've yet to join one, but it was really cool hearing Michelle untangle her interests and realizing how much of it resonated with my own experiences. And that the women's group is a place where all these nuances don't need to be explained because they're experienced, and those common experiences help us to relate to others and to find out more about ourselves. Which leads me to want to know why men need men's groups. I'm going to talk to three different men about this. First, a heads up on this episode. I did wonder how much sexuality plays into all this. With the case of women's groups, I think most women, regardless of sexuality, do have certain common experiences in society. But then, I don't know what role being of a different sexual orientation plays into the desire for an all-female space. Same with the men's spaces. I try to find some people who are into men's groups and women's groups who also don't identify as being heterosexual because I wanted to get their take, but I just didn't come across anyone. But I'm keen on hearing those experiences too. So drop me a line if that's you and if you want to share about that. Back to men's groups. Yes, they can seem like a baffling concept because, I mean, men are still the gender who wield the most power. They are the status quo. Often as a woman, you feel like public space is largely a male space anyway. So why do they need their own spaces? We're going to talk to a coach who runs a men's group and a young male who slagged off men's groups on a previous episode of this very podcast, but who is now really into them. But first, I'm going to chat to a man who started a men's group when he was studying at Oxford University and he was aged 19. Alex Lindsley just wanted to get together with some guys to chat. And so he put up a post about this on the internet, and he ended up in the national press. Some people were outraged at why men would need their own space, and they saw it as some sort of a sexist and outdated notion, made worse by the fact that this request for a men's space was from a white middle-class male at Oxford University, the sort of person who is one of the least marginalized. Why would someone like him need a men's space? I met up with him for morning tea in a hotel lobby to find out more.
I could go and like hang out in the bar and I could have a beer and chat shit. That wasn't a problem. I wasn't having many honest, open, vulnerable conversations. And nor was I having conversations about stuff that was really like important to people. That just kind of gradually became less and less satisfying. And that was particularly with the men that I knew. Because of that, I decided to put up a pretty simple website and sent out an email saying, look, are there some men who want to sit in a circle and just be honest, try and drop the bullshit, not try and repress each other. And we ended up having like what I think are pretty unremarkable Norman human conversations about those things, talking about like how we were making sense of the world, what was important to us. I have no problem admitting I was scared that I'd be ridiculed for breaching a load of the topics that I wanted to breach with the kind of guys that I was going out to the bar with. I can kind of see that that was well placed, particularly as I wouldn't handle that with the kind of confidence and self-assurance that I would now. It seems pretty obvious to me that whilst the world as it is obviously structurally biased against women in numerous ways. However, one of the many facets of it is that it prescribes a particular box for male behaviour. Actually, there's a guy called Tony Porter who's done a fantastic TED talk on the man box, which kind of sums up a lot of my feelings on this, which kind of says, look, the unwritten rules of masculine behaviour, you've got to be strong. You don't get close to men, you compete with men. You don't have emotions, you get shit done. Subscribing to those beliefs is incredibly limiting for the individuals, but damaging, I think, more broadly. I wasn't setting out to make some big statement say this is the solution to all of the gender roles in society. There are loads of de facto male-only spaces. When I was at university, like sports clubs, drinking societies, all those kind of things, some of them at Oxford are explicitly male-only, and a lot of them become de facto male-only spaces.
Because of the dynamic and the vibe and everything?
Because there are only men there, like, okay. In a lot of instances. It's not so much that the male-only space is of value, it's a male-only space. There's a set of agreements that we're going to reflect on our behaviour. That we're going to be honest, that I am, to the best of my ability, going to try and be vulnerable with you. Or if I don't want to be, I'm going to be honest about that. To agree that if somebody challenges you, he's doing that from a position of wanting to support you and from a position of wanting you to perhaps better understand something, not from a position of wanting to criticize you or belittle you.
So it's not competitive?
Yeah. It's not like, oh, that's what you think about the world. Well, you're wrong, you idiot. It's not debating society. Once it kind of became known that this was what I was doing, none of my immediate friends or acquaintances actually came to the group. But a lot of them would come and talk to me about stuff.
Ah, so like one-on-one?
Yeah. Because you're not being seen doing it.
Huh. So that's cool. So basically they're like, Alex has flagged himself up as someone who's open. I don't want to make everyone else know, but...
Right,
But what were the kind of conversations that people would bring up? Because I'm trying to get a scope of...
Really simple stuff. Like, you know, I'm having a tough time with my girlfriend. Or, like, existing conversations would change their tone slightly where, you know, as well as saying, oh, my dad's coming to see me this weekend. They'd also be, my dad's coming to see me this weekend. And I'm afraid he's going to put a load more pressure on me to kind of live up to what he thinks I should be doing. I mean, it's also worth noting that I lost a lot of friends very quickly as a result of it as well.
Wow. But I'm wondering, after you set up this group and you started having these more honest conversations with men, did the role of your female friends change in your life? Like, would you... Maybe this isn't something that you would notice. I need to bug one of your female friends
you
and
totally
be like...
You should. I'd be fascinated to know what they'd say. I think, that, you know, there's a bit of a change in our relationship because I was a lot more relaxed. I suspect I might have been more pleasant to hang around with at times. You mentioned it earlier, that kind of like, it can be really nice to be in that position of providing emotional support to someone, but if you feel like that person is only leaning on you, mm-hmm. or that there's an expectation that, you know, you're wrong if you don't support them, just mm-hmm. because you're like, hey, look, I'm tired, like, I need to look after myself right now. That is not such a nice thing. I can think of instances where, because I didn't have a broad range of supportive relationships of whatever kind, I was needy and selfish.
Okay, so the next guest actually runs a men's group. Ankush Jain is a coach, and he runs a men's group as well as a 4-day immersion program for men. I want to know about the nuances from his end, about why there's value in only having men together, and also his take as someone who is in the self-development world. We also met up in a hotel lobby for some tea and chat. Here it goes.
For a living now, I'm a coach, and I do this for a living, but before I did that for, I don't know, about 11 years, I was, I guess, in the personal development world, from reading books to listening to stuff in the car all the time, watching stuff online, and I was attending various different groups as well. And what I found is that there were a few groups that I attended that were men-only groups. For some reason, I just really resonated with it, and it was something that was very different. It wasn't just the fact that there were men-only groups. It was something about men who were looking to better themselves. That was kind of the key. It was like, oh, okay.
The type of man.
Yeah, I think that's really important. Well, it was for me. And it was funny because growing up, I didn't really always feel very comfortable, you know, just being in a group of men, because I was like, I don't really follow football, so that's what men talk about. You know, like, there were certain things that I just, like, didn't feel that I really resonated with that. But I was really interested in personal growth. So when I found a group that was really pointing in that direction, should I say that was the aim of the group, or to bring men of that type together, then I really liked that, because I was like, ah, now I've got a peer group. Other people are on this journey and this path and kind of similar to me. So,
but how was the vibe different in the men-only spaces rather than these mixed spaces where everyone's still after personal development and stuff? Because you're saying that it was specifically the men-only spaces that resonated with you.
Yeah, you know what? The truth is that I never was in a mixed group to begin with. Along my journey, I just happened to come across a men-only group, and I really liked it. And that group that I joined was very much about, no, this is a space for men. It was interesting because I found in my kind of normal life that when I was with other men, and I'm very open, I not kind of shy about sharing personal things, I found that other men, if I was open, other men would be open. And as soon as women would be in the room, they would shut down.
Mm.
That was less so for me, but I certainly found that for other men, literally to the point of, I'd be having a conversation with someone, let's say it's a very personal topic, you'd get men, this is what we're like, etc. And then their girlfriend would come in, or other friends, and they would categorically say the exact opposite.
Hmm.
And afterwards I'd say, why did you do that for? And they're like, well, I'm not going to admit that to her.
Oh.
And I was like, really? Whereas I would. And then it was kind of, oh, you're the weirdo. And I was like, no, you're all the same as me. You just don't admit it in front of other women. And so I did find that men tended to be not as open when they were around women. It's probably true for me to an extent too.
What were examples of topics though where this dynamic would play out?
With sexual things. There's this thing around, kind of like, men talk about sex and beer and
football,
right, all the time. But I don't think they do. Not really, not on a deep level. And so when you get to actually having a real conversation, men won't, for whatever reason, or certainly the men I came across, they wouldn't really be as open about that. And then there's a lot of shame that's associated with that. Even when you talk about, I guess, just feelings, right?
You put those in
air quotes, yeah. Let's say you come out of a relationship, or your friend comes out of a relationship, what do men do? We want to support each other. Let's go for a beer. Not talk about it.
Right.
You never talk about it. You go for a beer and talk about other stuff, but you never really talk about what's going on, what happened, why did it happen. And this is even true recently when I was talking to a friend of mine who's come out of a relationship. It wasn't nice for him, you know. And then I said, so, you know, what are you doing about it? And it was all real superficial stuff. Well, I'm going to go to the gym and, you know, get back on the horse and all the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than really looking into it a bit more deeply and saying, is this something else for you to learn here? Because, you know, it was like, no, we're not going to go there. We're going to stay over here where it's safe.
When you tried to go there with him, what happened?
I don't like pushing too much, so I kind of test the water a little bit, and if it's obvious the person doesn't want to go there, then I won't push.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that just generally a good rule in life, you know, not to try and push people into having a vulnerable conversation, because it just doesn't work.
Because I find they sort of like, you know, people who are obsessed with, I love to have vulnerable, open conversations with people. I'm like, it's more about you than it is about the other person. So I feel like I've come across that character. But a few things have come up for me in what you've said. I'm a woman, so I'm not party to these conversations that men only have amongst themselves. Mm. But I have a lot of male friends and a lot of sort of one-on-one friendships with men. Okay, this is just my anecdotal data, right? Mm. Something I've noticed is often the men I know who are best with their inner life tend to have a lot of female friends. And when you talk to them, they're like, yeah, because I can't really have this conversation with a lot of guys that I know.
Mm.
The other thing is as well, when they tell me that, oh, but a lot of conversations amongst guys is them sort of being competitive with each other about something or other. It's interesting that you're saying that when it's men only, they will have certain conversations that they won't have when a woman's around. So So I'm wondering if that's to do with a group dynamic. Maybe I'm weird and the people I know are a bit of an anomaly or something.
No, I think that's a really good point. So when I say men will have certain conversations that they won't have when women are around, it's if men are open to that conversation first.
Right.
So there are groups of men that I know, kind of friends or acquaintances, I would never have an open, vulnerable conversation with them. Not because I'm not comfortable with it, because I just know they don't want to go there. Yes, it's very much about the dynamic that's created. It's very much about the kind of man, if they're open to having that conversation. If they know that the other men in the group are not going to judge them for it or try and get competitive or do whatever else. Leading on, that's kind of what I really look to do and what I've created, because I craved that, you know? Like, I was like, I would love to have the kind of conversation I want to have, and I'm sure if I want it, and it was all a big experiment for me, I thought if I want it, there's got to be some of the people that are like that.
And also, I'm wondering, you've got the dynamic of the group versus like an intimate one-on-one. How are the conversations different in the group versus if one of these guys is just chatting to you? I'm wondering if there's something about the group that adds to the openness or the nature of conversations.
Yeah, 100%. I do both. I have conversations with people one-on-one, and they can be very, very deep. People can reveal all sorts of things in those conversations. And I never really expected this when I started in group work. I didn't realize that in my head it was kind of, you know, when you're one-on-one, you'll go deeper. And I found that it's not necessarily the case. It's really important to have the right group together. But if you have the right group of men together, then things can come out that really are different. And, you know, the groups that I run, they're paid groups, so people pay to be there. The best thing that I can do often is not hog all the airtime. And sometimes some of the most insightful things that come out are things that other men in the group say.
Do you mean that if one guy says, I'm having X issue in my life, and then four other guys also are like, I'm also having X issue. Do you think it's that sort of safety in numbers or that sort of support from a big group of people that helps them be open?
All it takes is one person to be vulnerable and to say, okay, here's something that I faced. And it kind of gives permission to other people to go, oh, right, he said that and no one shot him down. Okay, I can talk about it.
Yeah.
And sometimes people can talk about things that may not seem like relevant at all, and it's really surprising how there'll be something in that that is relevant to other people. Mm-hmm. One example is a guy, fairly young guy, married, was struggling in the bedroom with his wife, and it's a very vulnerable personal thing, and fair play, he was open enough to talk about it, and it was so bad it was to the point that they might have split up over it. Now on first glance that seems very specific to him, but as he started sharing, I guess that's my job to involve the group and support him, and I coached him a little bit around it. What really came out was other men in the group actually commented going, you know what, okay, I can't relate to maybe that bit, but there was something about what he said which they can relate, and maybe I'm being a bit vague. So the ultimate issue was he wasn't being present. That was the real crux.
During sex?
Yeah, during sex.
Or in the relationship in general?
Well, for him, it was really about sex. It's probably also going to be in the relationship in general. The symptom was in the bedroom. Mm-hmm. When we really delved into that, and I said, well, when you're with your wife, when you do have sex, how much are you in your head and how much are you in the moment? And he's like, no, I'm completely in my head. Mm. He's like, I'm thinking about this and that and about her pleasure. And I was like, well, next time you're with her, what about if you just dropped all of that? And he was like, can I do that? I was like, well, it can't get much worse than it is right now.
Okay.
As a kind of a side note, for that guy, I spoke to him a few days later and he said, when I got home, we had the best sex I've ever had.
Nice.
My wife said I'm a changed man. He came to another event I did 3 months ago and he goes, I didn't think it could get better, it's got better. Now, there was another guy in the room who didn't have that issue, but when he heard me coach the guy and when he heard him share and all this stuff came up, he said, you know what, for me, it doesn't appear in the bedroom, but actually, how present am I with my wife when I come home from work? Often a lot of things that people talk about, which is scary to talk about, they're just symptoms. When you go deeper than the symptoms and you go, what's really going on, that becomes more universal.
Had you have been one-on-one with these guys, they wouldn't have gone so deep or have been so open or have gotten out so much out of the interaction.
Look, sometimes people can say things one-on-one that they wouldn't say in a group. On the other hand, in a group, it can open something up for someone. You can hide for an hour.
In a one-on-one?
In a one-on-one.
Is there stuff that men experience that
only really comes out in these groups, things that wider society might be unaware of.
There's a saying that I heard, I don't know who said it originally, but it was, the more personal, the more universal. I've really found that to be true when I've been doing these groups and men have opened up. Things that they will say will be often relevant in some way, shape or form, as I've already said, to everyone in the group. You know, with the women's groups that I've run, it's actually relevant to men and women quite often. Not everything, but a lot of the things. I think so many people struggle with issues that they think are their issues and only they face. And really, that's not the case. The actual detail might be slightly different.
Mm-hmm. But the root of the issue.
But I like to call them symptoms and roots. I think both of them are the same. A symptom might be lacking in confidence. For one man, it might be in relationships or with women. Very, very common. For another guy, they could really have no issues in that, but they could also be lacking in confidence in their career, right? As a symptom, that looks really specific, but the root cause is always the same for me. It's about some belief they've got, some thought they've got, something that they think is true that really isn't true.
I think the past decade, but especially the past 5 years, there's been so much talk about women and women being more visible in all areas of society. A lot of conversations about feminism and different roles for women in society and stuff. And so what's been interesting in parallel to that is that as women become more visible and, you know, have these discussions, then there's been a lot more talk about what it means to be a man within this sort of changing context that's happening. I want to know about when you started attending these men's only groups, how they sort of impacted your own development of what it means to be a man for you.
One particular group I attended was really about being a man. And that's when I started really thinking about it. What I really liked was how little it was about women. Because so much stuff that I had read or come across or seen, or, you know, just even in the media, it was kind of what it means to be a man in the context of women. It was always in the context of women. 6.5 years ago when I joined, you know, a men's group, what I really liked was, no, forget women. What does it mean to be a man for you? What do you want to do? What do you want to be in the world? And that was really refreshing for me, because up until then it was like, okay, the world's changing and feminism has moved forward and there's more equality, which I support. I think it's all great stuff. But then where does that leave men? And it was always trying to be like, well, how do I fit in into the world of women? What on earth do women want? I didn't know. I still probably don't know. Instead, kind of moving away from that and saying, well, no, what do I want as me, as a man? What do I want? What do I want to create? How do I want to be in the world? And so that was really, really refreshing.
Does my question in itself perpetuate the problem, do you think? Or my approach, even maybe the whole premise of my podcast. Like, does this perpetuate this whole problem that you're talking about, that figuring out what it means to be a man is so in the context of women?
When I was younger, I used to really like have strong view, like, this is the way it is, right? And this is the way it should be.
And then you grow up and you get more chill.
Yeah,
and then I'm more open to
chilled out a bit. Yeah, that's probably the answer.
I feel like I've had that too.
And for me, I was thinking about this morning, actually, before we started speaking, was, look, everyone's just trying to do their best. Really, that's all it is. We're all, you know, the premise of this podcast, the work that I do, everything that everyone's doing, no one really wakes up in the morning and thinks, I'm going to make my life really difficult or I'm going to try and make someone else's life difficult. I don't think the vast majority of people do that. I'm just sharing what I think makes sense, and you're doing what you think makes sense. And who knows, because you've done what you've said and given me a platform to speak about something, this may help someone else. Mm-hmm. So it's all good, you know, as far as I'm concerned.
You said that you hadn't given much thought to what it means to be a man. Why is that? Were there sort of literally no spaces or places where you felt you could have that conversation? Or did it not really occur to you to be having those thoughts? Like, why did that not take place?
It didn't really occur to me. And I think, I'm sure there are other men who, growing up, they may have been told, this is what it means to be a man. I never really had that.
So it was assumed that you should know?
I just don't think anyone ever thought about it.
Okay.
I've kind of come full circle. It's like, I didn't really know what it meant to be a man. Then I went and really explored that, and now I've kind of come back to, it's all made up anyway, so I don't need to think about it anymore and just carry on doing what makes sense to me.
Do you mean to say that, because in some ways this resonates with me as well, that you figured out how to be a man, the sort of man that you want to be, more through exploring who you want to be, full stop? Because I feel like with me, not that gender hasn't always been something quite at the forefront of my thoughts and like my conscience and stuff, but I think maybe figuring out my own issues and who I wanted to be has gone hand in hand with figuring out the kind of woman I want to be. So I don't know if it's something similar with you.
Yeah, I think that probably makes a lot of sense. You know, I don't really think about what kind of man I want to be anymore. What kind of person do I want to be?
Okay.
And maybe even that's not true. It's not what kind of person do I want to be. It's just every day, just being, really.
Like being your best self.
Yeah, and we all do stuff that we can learn from if we choose to. And I feel just more comfortable in my own skin. And I think when I was really looking to the question, what does it mean to be a man? What does it mean to be a man in the 21st century? What does it mean to be a man in this post-feminism world or whatever they call it now? That's when I just wasn't comfortable in my own skin. That's the bottom line. I didn't know what it meant to be me. I didn't know how to fit in and I didn't know how to be. And yet when I've stopped thinking about it, it's because I don't need to think about it anymore because I am more comfortable in my skin.
If you had to sum it up, what would you say is the best reason for having a men's only space?
For me, if having a men's only space allows people to open up and really explore some of their beliefs and misunderstandings which aren't true, and that allows them to have a better life, then that's why I do it. For me, it's only about context. A men's group, that's the context. The context is about being more powerful, and that allows me to go deep and help people have a different life. That's it. But for the sake of it on its own, if that's all it was, I wouldn't see it be very helpful. And in fact, that's why I created my own men's group rather than going to other people's, because I found some of them were a little superficial.
So basically, for you, a men's group is a means to an end, the end to be your best self.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
The parallels between a lot of what Ankush just said and what Michelle was saying earlier are really cool. That these gender-specific groups basically enable a safe space where people can explore themselves with support, and the kind of support that comes from a shared experience and a common understanding. It's that shared experience that allows for a certain level of trust and understanding, and the feeling that it's safe to open up, to be more vulnerable, and to delve deep in the pursuit of greater self-discovery, self-awareness, and self-improvement. You know, I talked about everyone going on about men's groups and women's groups. One person who keeps talking to me about men's groups is Alec Malloy. He was in the episode about redefining and owning masculinity. Now, he joked about men's groups, saying that he doesn't think many men of his culture would join one and sit around and talk about their feelings.
You can imagine, like, what a men's group would look like. If you got, like, a random sampling of the population, sat 10 American men down in a room, told them to talk about their feelings, first thing is, everyone would stand up and leave. If you made them sit down and talk about their feelings, I can only imagine what might happen.
Alec also said in that episode that his female friends had really helped to open his eyes. They'd helped him understand the female experience better, but they also helped him to actually feel a human connection. He also talked about having gone to an all-boys school and how he just felt really disconnected and that a lot of his friendships were threadbare. That's the word he used for it. So I'm wondering why he's suddenly going on about men's groups so much. I called him on Skype to find out exactly what changed. I'll leave you with him to end this episode.
I was totally wrong, is basically what it was. I had a hard time imagining what a men's group would actually be like. I just didn't have a lot of faith in other men. I was at this conference recently. It was kind of announced that there was going to be a men's circle at, like, kind of late in the night, and I was like, holy shit, I mean, that's like hilarious. And so I was like, I need to go to this. And I showed up, and there were maybe 8 or 10 other guys, and we just kind of sat around and talked, and it was really awesome. It was raw. I was very pleasantly surprised.
When you describe it to me, though, the concept of a bunch of guys late at night saying, hey, let's gather together, that doesn't sound like much of a unique thing.
Yeah, but I mean, it was in the context of, let's have a men's circle, because there was supposed to be a woman's circle, and so that was kind of the context. It was kind of like a bunch of men were like, the women have a woman's circle, so we should have our own men's circle, which is, I mean, it's kind of silly. But I mean, it was honestly very sincere.
When did you see that and think, yeah, and not think it'll just be like guys down at the pub or at a bar or something, just chatting late at night? What made it seem different to you?
That is a good question. I really didn't know. I just was like, men's circle, I really had no idea what it would be like going in. I mean, I kind of assumed that it would be the conference, the people that were at the conference were pretty awesome people. And I was assuming it wasn't like totally facetious. You had a bunch of really good people. And I mean, I think I also tried to set the tone, but it was really everyone that was there was setting like a really good tone for the conversation.
So it's basically about the type of men who turned up, who ended up having the sort of conversation that you had.
Yeah. I mean, and this was the kind of the one thing that I always didn't really think was so great about men's groups, or rather the kind of critical flaw in the men's group is that the people who would go to the men's group are not necessarily the people who would really need a men's group. So I mean, the guys who were at this, I mean, they were all pretty like self-aware feminists, I would say largely. But still, for me, though, it was like this huge awakening, because I mean, I got loads and loads of female friends who I realized there's some things I just can't talk about just out of just like pure experience, whether it's about sex or it's about like masculinity. I mean, there's plenty of things I can talk about with my female friends, but there just is what I now realize is just a lack of perspective that you just can't get from females.
So you need someone you can talk to about the shared male experience.
Basically, yeah.
Are you still in touch with the men in that circle?
Yeah, we started up a Slack channel, and we've now grown to maybe about 30 members or so. We're still kind of regularly posting. It's gotten quite interesting, and now we're kind of all scattered around the globe, but there's talks of having kind of meetups, and we at least, there's usually questions or comments or statements or kind of conversation happening every few days or so in this.
So I don't want to be too intrusive, but I do want to get a feel of the sort of things you talked about that you can't talk about with your female friends. So what sorts of topics were coming up?
Well, no, obviously I can't really talk about specifics, but there were a couple conversations that we had that were around power dynamics in relationships, that were around female expectations of men, and what men are expected to do kind of as the patriarch in a relationship. It was really interesting to hear stories from other men who are in relationships who were having difficulty with the expectations that were not necessarily being forced in them by their partner, but had been kind of set up by either their parents or by their culture or even by their partner. That's an experience you can't hear from other women. You can hear women experiencing maybe the difficulty of that, but you couldn't hear it kind of like straight from the source.
This is interesting, because are you saying this sort of conversation doesn't happen if you've got five guys down at a bar or something?
I mean, I would definitely say that, yeah, that certainly is not a no. I'm definitely being very flattening, but there was a very like clear tone set by the guy who had kind of set this up. There's a very clear tone set at the beginning, saying like it's going to be raw and vulnerable and...
So would you say that the reason why the men's group worked is because, A, you get to talk about a shared male experience, but you also get to do it with men who are open to that, you know, to just being open and real and who aren't going to put up a front?
Yeah. That's basically it, yeah. I went to this specifically because I had said on the podcast how stupid a men's group sounds. And then, like, in the last year, I since have heard that there are, in fact, men's groups, like, everywhere. I now have since attended one, and I was really surprised, and it's something I feel like I definitely need more of in my life. Some of the most kind of interesting realizations that I've had about my most recent relationship have come out of the conversations that I've had in this. I really, really could have used this when I was going through my last breakup.
You heard from Michelle Lim, Alex Lindsley, Ankush Jain, and Alec Malloy on this episode of The Gender Knot, where we explored the point of women's groups and men's groups in this day and age. We're going to go hardcore for the next episode. We're going to talk about the economy. Specifically, we're going to talk about what a more feminine economy looks like. We're hearing about women rising in a host of professions, but what does it mean for the economy to be more feminine, rather than to simply have more women in it?
I think the feminine workplace looks like an environment that really values emergence. And what I mean by that is that we work in a way where we're in full recognition that ideas and insights can come from any corner of the room, any space, that can be communicated in any way.
And is there anything to be concerned about women wanting to power ahead?
I find a lot of the discussions about needing more women in professional positions, CEOs for example, to be slightly disconcerting. because they can partially seem like calls for more women to affix their self-worth to employment and career. When that happens, neoliberalism will have swallowed everyone up whole. Both sexes will be equal, of course, but equal gears in a very dismal machine.
That episode is out in 2 weeks, so that's on 14th August. But I'll be back next Monday with something short and sweet. You can get in touch via email. It's thegendernot@gmail.com. Or find our Facebook page and drop us a message. It's The Gender Knot Podcast. Okay, I'm off to get out my economics textbooks. While I nerd out, you take care and I'll speak to you soon.
Some brands offer you low finance, or cashback, or servicing.
Renault don't do ors. We do ands. The Renault Kadjar, with 1.91% APR, and €1,000 cashback, and 3 years servicing, saving you thousands. Renault, the brand with the ands. Visit your local Renault dealer. Finance is made under a hire purchase agreement. Terms and conditions apply. Deposit required, subject to lending criteria. See Renault.ie.